We had been studying the booklet that's called Your Reactions Are Showing. And the premise of the book is that we tend to react to other people instead of act. And if we're given a chance often to think about what we're going to do, often we'll do the right thing. But it's when we get in those pressure situations and you have to make this snap decision that we sometimes let either emotion or the flesh get in the way, and we end up doing the wrong things. We don't reason things out, and we react wrongly. And in essence, we let other people control us. We surrender control to another person, and that person decides how we're going to act. And we want to be careful that we don't do that. And so as we finish that, we want to go into an extended study of that. And it's kind of a combination study of the life of Joseph and the principles that we've studied. And several weeks ago, we started through this, and we looked at Joseph's family. When we come to chapter 37, verses 1 and 2, let's go ahead and read that just as a reminder of what we were looking at. Chapter 37, verse 1, it says, "And, or now Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations, or the records of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought unto his father the evil report about his brother," their evil report. Now, a couple of things out of this, and really this is foundational to the whole story. Understanding Joseph's family is critical. Here's a 17-year-old boy, and as a 17-year-old boy, he is in a very, I wouldn't say a unique family, but he's in a family that many people today would recognize and would actually have be able to identify with. A lot of times we think the Bible is just kind of this separate thing, and it doesn't really understand what we're going through. But you have a young man here, a 17-year-old young man, and he is living in a house where he's working. He's very active. He's involved. He's feeding. But he has a whole slew of half-brothers. His family situation is not real positive. You might remember we took some time to look at the family dynamics here, and there are two passages that record this. And remember, Jacob married, he wanted to marry Rachel, and when he went through the wedding night, the next day he realized it's Leah, and then he marries Rachel, and then they start to have children, and Rachel can't have children. Leah has several, and then you get the handmaids involved, and before it's all over, you've got this whole group of kids that are there, and they're from all different families. And when you list it out, Leah has the first child, and that's Reuben. Now remember that, because Reuben's going to come up in the story again. And Reuben, Simeon, and Levi are the oldest children. And so that's important for us. And then Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, has children, Dan and Naphtali. And then you have Zilpah, Gad, and Asher. And not all in this order, but Leah then has Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah. And Dinah is the only daughter that's mentioned. There may have been some others. We don't know. And then finally, Rachel has Joseph and Benjamin. And Rachel, of course, was the wife that he loved. And he loved these children especially because they were the sons of this wife and they were the sons of his old age. But if you look at that list, you realize that here is a family where you have four women in the house and you have brothers, half-brothers from four different mothers. Now, that can work, but it usually doesn't. And in this case, you have some tension that certainly is going on between the siblings here, some things that are not real pleasant at times, although they're family. There's some real heartaches that are going on within this family. And so as you look at the story of Joseph, you have to realize that he's not born with this silver spoon in his mouth. He's not a young man who is going out there and he's going to go into adulthood and he's been given every advantage that there is. That's just not true. He has instead come up in a family where he's had to go through struggles. He has had to endure some difficulties. And when you go to verses 3 and 4, then we add something to this story. So let's go back to that in verses 3 and 4. It says, now Israel, and Israel is another name for Jacob. Now Jacob, or Israel, loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. Now let's stop there for a minute. What do we call this? We put a couple of terms in there, but what is going on in the family? Favoritism, I heard someone say. What would you say? Partiality, favoritism, yeah. Anything else? Those are the two that normally come up. You have clearly a dad who is showing favoritism to one son. He is very, very partial to him, and he sets him apart. He doesn't hide this. You know, it's one thing to say, you know, I really like that youngest girl or something like that. Or, you know, to confess to somebody privately, I just really, that son of mine, I like him. You know, and I'm especially partial to those middle children in the family. They're just the wonderful, you know, children. It'd be one thing to do that. But he gives him the coat of many colors. Now, you've been around for a while. What was a coat of many colors? All right, it was Joseph's coat, yeah. All right. What did it look like? Many colors. You guys are good. Okay, possibly royalty. You were going to say something else?
It's just color wasn't much color back
yeah.
then. And so anybody had something really colorful was something special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a key thing. When we look around here tonight, we see a lot of color. You know, we've got red and blue and yellow and more blue back there. And, you know, I've got red on. So we have lots of color. It doesn't surprise us at all. I remember a singer at the Bill Rice Ranch when I was a teenager, Billy Renstrom. Any of you ever hear Billy Renstrom? He was blind, and he had a great voice. And later in his life, he lost his sight when he was younger. I don't remember how old, but then he was blind for upwards of 40, maybe 50 years. And then they did some surgery and corrected his sight. And I remember him telling us, he would get up and sing at the Bill Rice Ranch, and there were about 1,000 kids there, and he would give a little bit of his testimony. And he said the thing that astounded him more than anything else was in that time, and this would have been in the late 70s that he had gotten his eyesight back, so it would have been back in the 40s, 30s even, that he had lost his eyesight. He said what astounded him most was the brightness of the colors in people's clothing. So even in that amount of time, you had this color that all of a sudden came out. And so in that time, for somebody to have color in their clothing was unique. It was something that you spent money on, and you were honoring somebody with that. When we think of a coat of many colors, and you'll see it translated different ways, a vari-colored coat, or various-colored coat, or a coat with colors on it. But it obviously was a coat, a tunic of some kind, that was distinctive. You could see it from a distance. And here's a dad that is partial, is showing favoritism to a son, and he doesn't hide it. And it's going to have its impact. Obviously, you and I wouldn't have to spend a lot of time on this. What happens if a parent shows a great deal of favoritism to a child? Shawnee? The other children are obviously bothered by it. Yeah. What does it normally do to that child? But yeah, you pick on him. What is it?
Hate him.
Hate him, yeah. But the child himself? He's lonely. He can't even get very spoiled through it because he can do no wrong. And so this whole thing, when you're studying parenting, this is often a stop on studying parenting. We want to be really careful not to show favoritism to one child. And again, this is an extreme example almost, and you have to wonder, why was he doing this? What was he trying to accomplish? Ron?
Was favoritism to the firstborn common in that day?
Well, yeah, and this is another good thing, yeah, or good point. The firstborn had some very high standing. Where does Joseph come in the line? Yeah, he's down at the bottom of the list. Now, he's the firstborn of Rachel, which I think in Jacob's mind, maybe that's what he's thinking. He's the firstborn of my first wife, but he's not my firstborn. Well, he's the firstborn of my second wife. No. No, it's the firstborn of the first wife. Yeah. Yeah. Chipper? Yes. Right. Right. It is, right. And, you know, you can look at this and say, here's Jacob saying, I want to honor him as the firstborn, but he's not the firstborn. And he's trying really to push this out. This is God's plan to use the firstborn. And to us, the firstborn doesn't matter. I'm trying to think who has the most. Well, you have two sons. Andy has Nathan and Patrick, and to us, you have three sons. You have three sons. To us, we don't really think, here's my firstborn. There might be a slight inclination if I'm looking for the executor of my will, but we wouldn't hesitate to say, nah, my middle son's going to be the one to do that. But that's not true in a lot of cultures. In the Middle East still, if Joe were here, he's had a lot of dealings with this. In the Middle East, the firstborn son has the rights of the family. And it is a serious breach of etiquette for a younger child to usurp the authority of his older brother. Still, it is. And I was asking some of the kids in chapel when I was talking to them, and I think it was in China. Is that still the oldest son? Is still has the authority, and he's the firstborn and has some rights. Is it that way in India?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. I think really our culture and a few of the other cultures would be unique in that we don't think that way. But in their culture, Reuben was thinking, I'm the firstborn. And so he's the one that really should be put out by this. And so this is Dad trying to really go in the face of not only culture, but in God's plan in his life. But he's trying to exalt Joseph when he knows that he's not the firstborn. So he puts him in a very awkward position. And we're going to come back to that before we're finished here. So here's this mixed up family. We didn't read verse 4 today, so let's read that because we need to get that on the table as well. And when Joseph's brethren saw that their father loved Joseph more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Now, let that soak in. They hated him and they could not speak peaceably unto him. When you think of not being able to speak peaceably unto him, what comes to your mind? What is the picture you get? Scorned. What's that?
Hateful brats.
Hateful brats. You think there would have been any arguing? Oh, yeah. Just, you know, your kids would tell on each other. This would be magnified. It would just, they couldn't get along. They just hated him. And so everything they could do to cause dissension and turmoil with him, they would do it. And it's one of the only places this terminology is used. They couldn't speak peaceably to him. And so it's an interesting statement. Now, I want you to notice something else in that. When their brethren saw that their father loved Joseph more than all his brethren, they hated him. Now, does there anything strike you a little odd about that?
Are they talking about Joseph or Jacob?
They're talking about Joseph. But you've got the point. What would it be? Yeah. Okay. Aaron, what were you going to say? There you go. We're going to come back to this when we finish as well with this section. They're mad at the wrong person. You know, I'm sure that Joseph, I'm split on this in my mind. You know, he's the one that gives the evil report, but it's an accurate report. It's just telling the truth about his brothers. And, you know, he's not a snitch. He's giving his dad an accurate report. And he wears this multicolored coat, but it's an awkward position for him. If he doesn't wear the coat, who does he offend? Yeah. If he does wear the coat, who does he offend? His brothers. I don't know what you do with that. You wear it out of the house, and when you get to your brothers, take it off? You're not honoring your dad when you do that. So he's in a really difficult position. He doesn't have a good choice here. So I don't know that Joseph did anything to deserve this. But the hard thing when you read that and when you really think it through is here are 11 brothers, and I tend to think that it was 10 of them. Benjamin probably was not involved in this. That they were mad at Joseph. Well, why be mad at Joseph? He's not the one who's showing favoritism. He's the object of favoritism. And as we're talking about reactions, this is one of the things that we want to make sure that we pick up. Sometimes we find ourselves angry at the wrong person. And a lot of times we're angry at someone else when who is actually the problem. In this case, it was Dad, but in many cases, it's me. I want to blame everybody else, and I'm mad at them, and I'm mad at them, and I'm mad at this person, and that person did something else, but it's really me. And we really find ourselves tending to do that. And I hadn't really thought about this until I was studying this so that we could go through it. And I got to thinking, this is just wrong. Here are these brothers that are mad at Joseph, and he didn't really do anything. He's not the culprit. And so here they are mad at the wrong person. All right, let's keep going in it. When we get to Genesis 37, then we are going to complicate the story a little bit further. Let's go to verses 5 through 8. I don't think this story is unfamiliar to many of you, but let's read through it. And Joseph dreamed a dream and told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright," or erect is the idea. "And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf." And his brethren said unto him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for him, for his dreams and for his words. Now, when it says here that they were binding sheaves, I've not done it, but I've actually seen that they still do this in some parts of the world. You would take stalks of wheat or whatever it would be, and you'd cut them off with a sickle, and you just begin to bundle them. We do bales. They would just bind them together in a round a circle, and then they would stack those. And so as they were out in the field, they would take these, and they'd lay them down, and they'd come along with a cart and collect them. And Joseph said, "I had this dream. And as I had this dream, you know, mine stood erect." And when he says erect, he means that it stood up in a kingly way, in a clearly dominant fashion. And all you guys had your sheaf stand up, and it did obeisance to me. What's obeisance? If you had a more updated translation, you can give me another word. What is it? They bowed down. Yeah. It's actually translated that way in a lot of modern translations. They bowed down. How do you think that goes over with the brothers? Whew. Yeah. Now, we could discuss something else. Should Joseph have told his brothers about the dream? Was he? I don't know.
I mean, when my kid comes to me with factual stuff, it's factual, but there's Mark.
Oh, sure, yeah. Chip? Could be. He's still right, apparently right around 17. Yeah. Yeah, maybe naive. You know, here's the thing about Joseph. It doesn't give us any indication of whether he was right or wrong in doing this. You know, you could clearly tell this in a very, what'd you call it, a way. Your sheaves bowed down to me. Or you could come up and you could say very humbly, guys, I had a dream and I don't know what to make of it, but we're out in the field and my sheaves stood up, your sheaves bowed down to it. What do you think? What do you think that means? I don't know. I've read a couple of different things. Ryrie said that he shouldn't have told the dream, but it's hard to say. You know, we never have anything said about Joseph that's really negative. We never see him in a self-willed way promoting himself. We never see him really pushing his own agenda. So I don't know. But let's keep going. We have dream number two. Verse 9, and he dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bowed down to me or made obeisance to me. And he told it or related it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come and bow down ourselves to the earth? And his brethren envied him. But his father observed the saying or kept the saying in mind. Now here again, same question. Should he have told the dream? Well, in the end, I'm going to say that I think God intended for him to tell the dream. I think he wanted the brothers to know about this dream. Because in the end, they're going to recognize the significance of this dream. Here's God clearly giving him a vision. And so he relates this dream. And the fact that his father observed the saying or kept the saying in mind, although he rebuked him, it indicates that his father was thinking, what does this mean? There's something about this. Did Jacob have any dreams? Yeah, the latter. Mm-hmm. God was teaching him something. Now, always remember that your dreams generally mean absolutely nothing. They mean that the sauce was too hot. These dreams that people relate in the Bible were unique. I mean, they were not just the normal dreams. These were things that were so clear that it was obvious God was doing something. Because you can have some very realistic dreams, can't you? But these were unique. And my position always has been that when God finished the revelation of his word, that he doesn't use dreams anymore. There's no consistency to dreams or to interpreting them. And so we don't have anything to really help us with that. But as God was revealing himself in the Old Testament, they didn't have the Bible, they didn't have the Holy Spirit, and God would use dreams. And so he has this dream, and even Joseph doesn't understand the dream. He doesn't know what's going on and what's taking place. And so he tells the dream, and his father says, what, are you thinking that even your mom and I are going to bow down to you? Yet his father says there may be something to this. So his father then sends Joseph. If you go to verse 12, his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem, and Israel, Jacob said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said unto him, here am I, or I will go. And he said unto him, go, I pray thee, and see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron. So he came to Shechem. In the next couple of verses, he can't find them. He runs across a man that tells him where they are when you get down to verse 17. And so he's looking for his brethren. Now, go to verse 18, and we're going to get the players and the plot that really set the stage for the rest of the story. Verse 18. And when they, the brethren, saw him from a distance, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. Now, how did they know it was him? Saw him from a long way off. Coat of many colors. Had the blaze orange on. Here he comes. And this phrase, they conspired against him to slay him. Let's stop there and look at the reactions again. Is this the way to solve their problem? Obviously not. We'll just kill him. This is a reaction. And again, we have to be very careful that we don't make decisions that don't really solve the problem. Let's say that they actually killed him. Their conscience is forever stained at that point. And their father's devastated. He will be anyway by what they do. But it doesn't really solve their problem. It just adds more problems. If you look at this and say, all right, what is the right way to solve their problem? They needed to address the actual problem, the favoritism. They need to talk to Dad about it. They need to be praying about it. They need to be talking with Joseph about it. They need to be really spending time in the Word. They do none of that. And they come to an illogical conclusion that our reaction to all of this, to this circumstance that we find ourselves in, is that we're going to conspire against him to slay him. We'll just kill him. That's the way we're going to be. And here is the thing that we want to be careful that we don't come to illogical conclusions in reacting to bad situations that are unfair. Yet it's not going to excuse us doing the wrong thing. Go to verse 19. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer comes. And now therefore, come now therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say, some evil beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. We'll fix him. And Reuben. Now, what do you know about Reuben? What did I tell you earlier?
Firstborn.
Yeah. And I got to say, Reuben does step up. Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into the pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again. Now, I'm going to give Reuben, good marks and bad marks. He did really good things here. What did he not do? And as far as we know, he didn't. We're going to argue from silence. But what did he not do? Ron? Yeah. And even beyond that, does he ever rebuke his brothers? Not here. Now, maybe he did. And he did stand up and said, no, let's not kill him. Let's put him in the pit. I'll see if I can rescue him later. And he tries by kind of subterfuge to get him out of there, but he doesn't just stand up and say, guys, we are not doing that, and you're wrong for what you're thinking. He knows this is wrong. His conscience would bother him, but he knows that this is, he's not willing to take his brothers on. Now, they're willing to kill a brother, what's one more? Yeah, numbers are against him. So I'm skeptical that Reuben is a good guy. I know he's not a good guy, but he does step up here a little bit. If you keep going, verse 23, and it came to pass, when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat, and many of many colors that was upon him, and they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty, there was no water in it, and they sat down to eat bread. And they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spices, aromatic gum is the idea there, and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him. For he is our brother and our flesh. And his brethren were content. Then there passed by Midianite merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph unto Egypt. And Reuben returned unto the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit. And he rent his clothes, he tore his garments, and he returned unto his brethren and said, the child is not, and I, whither shall I go? And they took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, "This we have we found. Now know whether it be thy son's coat or no." And he knew it and said, "It is my son's coat. An evil beast has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt rent in pieces." And Reuben stood up and said, "No, he's not. Let me tell you what the brothers did." No, he didn't. And here's where I come to, Reuben was looking out for himself, but he doesn't stand up to his brothers. He's weak. In the end, Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his sons. And he says, "I'll go down to my grave in mourning." And in verse 36, the Midianites sold Joseph into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. Now, I'm going to put another slide up here in just a minute. I want you to see some reactions that we want to leave with tonight. I pointed this out when we looked at this before, but I want you to, if you like to make little notes in your Bible, you might want to do this. If you go back to verse 4 in the passage, they hated him. And if you go down to verse 5, what does it say? They hated him yet more. Go down to verse 8. Hated him yet the more. And then you go to verse 11. And it says his brothers envied him, or they were jealous of him. You go down to verse 18. They conspired against him to slay him, and they cast him into a pit. And then finally in verse 27. They said, "Let's sell him. Let's turn him into a slave." Here is the reaction of this group. There's nothing spiritual about it. This is complete carnality. And God is going to use it, but it's complete carnality. When we start looking at this, you look at the circumstances you find yourself in and you ask yourself, are you? Am I? Number one, am I mad at the wrong person for something? Am I mad at God for something that I did? Am I mad at this person when in reality it's my fault? Or am I mad at this person when in reality they're caught in the middle? Sometimes we get mad at a person who enforces the rules. I've had people in school do that. They're mad at a teacher for giving a student a grade. What do you want him to give him? They're mad at the wrong person. And we have that as a reaction oftentimes that we have to be careful about. Here's the second thing. Are you plotting? New American Standard, instead of conspired to slay him, it says they plotted to slay him. And sometimes instead of looking at the problem and solving it, they're plotting. You're thinking, here's how I could take care of this. But you're not solving the problem, and the reaction only makes the problem worse. While you may think that it will get rid of it, it actually only complicates the problem. And that's what these guys were doing. They were not confronting the actual problem. They never did get to it. They never did deal with it. Finally, in the end of their lives, or in the last days when they meet Joseph again, they're confronted with some of this. But they don't deal with the problem. Are there situations where you're right but wrong? Are you a Reuben? Reuben did sense his conscience was bothering him. He said, "Now wait a minute, I got to stop them from killing him." And although he's right in what he does, he's wrong because he doesn't follow through. When it comes time to deceive his dad, he deceives his dad. He jumps in with the wrong crowd. When it comes down to having to acknowledge that we sold him into slavery and my brothers did it, he's not willing to do it. Joseph was. Joseph was willing to go back to dad and give the evil report, even though he knew it was not going to be well liked. And so here's a Reuben is a guy who I call right but wrong. He was right and he knew the right thing to do, but he didn't do it. He ended up being wrong because of his decision. The last two deal with Joseph himself. In my mind, Joseph is in a no-win situation. And there are times that you're going to find yourself in that no-win situation. Regardless of what I do, somebody's going to be mad. And regardless of what I do, maybe everybody's going to be mad. But I have to do the right thing. In spite of that, you have to realize I'm being prepared by God to do something. God is going to use me in this. And how many times have you either seen somebody or perhaps you've been through a circumstance where you felt like you were in a no-win situation and you persevered in doing the right thing? And that's what Joseph is going to do. He's going to get the reputation for doing the right thing. And when he does that, he's being prepared by God to do something in the future. Now, most likely, you're not going to end up second in command in the country. But God may use you in a church setting, or he may use you in a family setting. He may use you in some other setting to be the one who says, I'm going to stand firm. I'm going to do what's right, even if it gets me hated by my brethren, even if my brothers decide to kill me and they finally sell me into slavery and I can't get out of that. In spite of that, I'm going to trust that God is doing something. My reaction is not going to be bitterness and anger. I'm going to sense that God is still in control and I've done the right thing as far as I know. And I feel like Jacob is that, or Joseph is that person, even with the dreams. It's a hard call. Tell about him or don't tell about him. It's kind of a no-win situation. But I feel like he did what he thought was best, and that he was trying to relay that God is doing something in my life. And even with that, everybody hated him. And so here are some reactions. Are you mad at the wrong person? Are you really dealing with the problem, or are you just plotting to solve it some way that's not really going to take care of it? Are you right? You know what the right thing to do is, but you're going to come out on the wrong side. In a no-win situation, maybe God is preparing you to do something special. And here's the setting we find ourselves, and as we move forward, we're going to find Joseph is going to continue to find himself in some of these very difficult situations, and his reaction is going to prove to be what God uses to promote him. All right, we're going to stop there, and then we'll pick it up again in a year or so. So, next year, yeah. I think it'll be the second week of January before we come back to that. We have 2 weeks that will be on Thursday night, and then I'll be gone for a Wednesday night. All right, let's pray, and if you have any questions or comments, we'll get them from you. Lord, we thank you for the examples you give us, and Lord, how wonderful it is to know that even in very unusual and difficult circumstances, you are working. And so I pray that you'll help us to see that in our lives. And Lord, help us to react rightly. And Lord, maybe tonight there's someone who is mad at the wrong person, or they're reacting in such a way that it's not really going to solve the problem. Lord, I pray you'll give them wisdom in seeing that, and that they would be able to confront it truthfully and react to it in a way that will aid in solving it. In Jesus' name, amen. Any questions or comments as we pass out the prayer sheet tonight?